Well, if you lived back in the late 70s, you probably remember that commercial. I'm not a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, but I tell you what, I love that commercial. If you were around the 70s, you remember the Steel Curtain. The defense is what they called the defense of the Steelers, and they were a mean group of men. You had a linebacker by the name of Jack Lambert. If you remember Jack Lambert, he had no teeth in the front. I mean, he was just ugly and mean, and they would hit you. And so literally, before they played my beloved Cowboys, I would always pray for Roger Staubach that he would not get hurt, because I thought for sure they were going to kill him every game. But Mean Joe Green, he never smiled. Never. And that's what made that commercial so cool, was because this guy who never smiled, smiled for a Coke. Now, if a Coke can change Mean Joe Green and give him a little bit of meekness for one moment, imagine what God can do inside of us, even if we're like Mean Joe. I think God can do something in us. And today we're looking again at the Beatitudes, and we're going through them. And I really have enjoyed the series as we've been looking at the series, because each one, you may think you know what it means, but it's always a deeper meaning. And Jesus can say so much in just one short sentence, because after all, this is his message, and he's the greatest preacher ever. And when he shares with us, he's telling us to look inside of our heart and see what's in there, and see if we are more like God, if we're kingdom-minded in the way we're living. We started off with the poor in spirit, remember? And we said, poor in spirit has nothing to do with your wealth status. It has everything to do with the condition of your heart. Is your heart still yearning for more of God, right? And then after the poor in spirit, we looked at the next one. And now we're on meekness. And meekness, he says, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth, in Matthew 5:5. They give, when we think of meekness, most of the time people don't think you're blessed if you're meek. Let's be honest. They think meekness is, or gentleness is, being a pushover, or being easy, or being wishy-washy, or not speaking up, or not standing up for what you believe in, or being a doormat. But nothing could be further than the truth when it comes to meekness. Meekness is so much different than that. Meekness, let me give you a definition, is simply strength under control. Strength under control. Now let's put this into context. When Jesus was preaching and he said, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth, he was talking to the Jews during a time when they were under Roman control. And that was probably the last thing that the Jew wanted to hear, because the Jew wanted to rise up and get this Roman soldiers off their backs. And Jesus is saying something that probably at that moment kind of went contrary to the way they were thinking. And it's probably one of the reasons why when Pilate brought Barabbas out and said, choose Barabbas or choose Jesus. Well, they probably, it's easier to look at Barabbas, because Barabbas was ready to fight for the kingdom and fight for their freedom. And so Jesus was preaching a message of meekness and love. And, well, that didn't kind of flow. So you can see why they chose Barabbas over Christ. But the power of meekness is the power of being a power inside that's under control. When you think of the Colorado River is a huge river. It's a massive river. It's a powerful river. But back in 1935, the Hoover Dam was built on the Colorado River between Arkansas and Nevada. And because of the Hoover Dam, it now supplies power and electricity to almost the entire West Coast because of the dam that was built. In other words, this massive river that was powerful and strong is now under control, and the power that it has is now harnessed and contained. It is now supplying power to the entire West Coast. The point is, to be effective, for power to be effective, it must be under control. I want you to take a moment and think of a wild, unbroken stallion, a horse with raw power. If you have an unbroken stallion, you don't let your toddler get near it, right? Though I can see Henry wanting to go near the horse and pet the horse, because that horse was going to rise up. And with that power, he could kill that child instantly. There is a ministry that is called Riding High Ministries. I don't know if you ever have seen them before, but they take an unbroken stallion and they will bring it sometimes into a church service for a Sunday service, and they'll have this whole area here set up with stuff on the ground and to make it like a stable almost, or an area. And or they'll go into a prison, or they'll go into a men's addiction place or somewhere. And they'll take an unbroken horse, and they will break the horse to show how the power of God can break a power that is, you know, and take that power that is like so uncontrolled and put it under control so that it's effective. I want you to take a minute, and I want to just show you a 3-minute video real quick of their ministry, and then I want to talk about it for a second. Case?
So I do a horse breaking presentation that's an illustration for people to try to relate with, that's going to help them see spiritual truths. And here at the Riding on Faith camp, we had a horse brought to us that was a 3-year-old that, as you can see right off the bat, this horse just went to kicking at me. And it wasn't just like swatting at me, it was actually coming at me, trying to kick me. And as I tried to push the horse around, it was becoming more and more obvious to me that because I believe that God picks the horses for the audience, and that it was representing a whole lot of what was going on in the hearts of people that were there. And so for me, I just stopped and quit asking the horse to do anything, and just started addressing the people in a way that I can see that there's a whole lot of people here that are just mad, and they're mad at God. They're resistant. They're literally like kicking at him. Not just complacent, but angry towards God. And I found out later that very much the case. There was multiple people that came up to me afterwards completely broken, in that they realized that that's what they've been doing. That's why they didn't have any peace. With the horse, there was two options there. I was either going to continue to fight and continue to ask him to move, or actually just stop and quit picking a fight with him. And it gave me an opportunity to stand back and reapproach the horse from a different direction, and affirm the horse that I'm not only there and that I'm powerful, but I wanted that horse to become a picture for every person to be able to relate to, that I'm safe. And my desire for the animal was the same desire that God's got for us, is one, to empower us and to set us free from the things that are holding us back. And so as I approached the horse from the front, he was a whole lot more relaxed, and I don't think I've ever done this before, but on this particular occasion, I just felt like I just had to just go ahead and get on him. And so immediately, he went from something that was super aggressive and coming at me to something I was able to just get on. And I think it was, one, because I had established that I wasn't afraid of him or his rebellion, but two, that I was for real, and that I cared enough to present myself to him.
Where the cowboy or the trainer will get in the middle of the ring And sometimes they'll have the rope, maybe they lassoed the horse, and they're holding part of the rope, but the horse will just keep moving and keep going. And the trainer will hold the rope and keep watching it going around and around. And the horse is not going to stop. He's going to keep walking because he's afraid. And the owner, or the cowboy or the ranch hand, he's saying kind words and just saying, "It's okay. You're going to be all right. I'll take good care of you." And it keeps going. And the horse will keep moving because the horse doesn't want to stop because the horse is afraid of a human. Because more than likely, the horse has been branded before. And no matter what you think, it hurts if you're a human or a horse to get branded. And it's probably not been branded one time. It's probably been branded twice. And some of the harder horses to break have been branded up to three times maybe. So you know when they see a human, they're thinking, he's going to brand me. And this is going to hurt. And I can't trust him. I don't want to trust him, right? Because, I mean, when I see humans, they end up hurting me. So the horse will keep moving. He'll keep walking until finally he gets tired. I mean, he can no longer really keep walking. And the cowboy will keep speaking tenderly towards the horse and say, "I'm not going to hurt you. I'm going to love you. I'm going to take care of you." And he'll keep watching the horse. He'll keep making eye contact until the rider will start, or the rancher will start making steps closer and closer, small steps. Until finally he gets right beside the horse. And then you'll see like he did, he patted him, you know, and began to continue to show love towards him. Sometimes he'll give him a little sugar or maybe an apple or something and just feed him for a moment just to let his spirit calm down inside because he's so afraid of the human. But as that man or woman continues to work with that horse, continues to love that horse, eventually the horse goes, "Okay, you're safe." And allow that one to get up upon that horse and ride that horse. I think it's a great illustration of how a lot of people are that have been hurt. You know, been hurt by church or hurt by situations, hurt by people, and they're afraid. And so they rile up and they're not ready to let God have complete control because they're afraid of God. They're afraid to let God be controlled, and God just stands there in the center of their life. And their life keeps going around and around in circles. And God keeps tenderly whispering, "But I'm here. I love you." He keeps waiting and waiting and waiting until they finally are tired of running. And then they surrender their life and let Jesus take control. You can see why that kind of presentation would have a huge impact in the prisons. You can see why that presentation has a huge impact in men's gatherings or in churches when it's done. Because there are a lot of people who are hurt, who are tired, and they submitting their life to Christ and surrendering it is hard. It's not easy for them. But in order to experience meekness is about giving ourselves to the power and control of Jesus Christ. Saying, "God, I will follow you. You are, quote, my pilot. You are my rider. That's the picture of meekness and gentleness. It's power under control. The truth is that horse is still just as powerful. And what's really cool is this power this horse had that was just used to lash out and create a scene is now being used to maybe herd 1,000 cattle. It's now being used in a right way, in a way that has a positive impact. Because now this power is under control. It's like for us as believers, it's like totally giving our lives to Christ and saying, Christ, I'm not, the power that I have is still mine, but I'm yielding that to Christ now so that now He is in control. I think one of the greatest challenges of pastors today is helping people submit their lives to Christ, to the authority of Jesus Christ. Because there's an overwhelming number of people who just refuse to submit to the authority of God. And the danger, and there's a real danger, if you don't submit your life to God's authority, the danger is you live in rebellion. You end up with a rebellious spirit because you're not yielding to God, and therefore it brings chaos into your life. A gentle spirit, a meek spirit, is willing to bow before the presence of God and yield their life to Him. It's all about being willing to live our life according to His Word. Truth is, gentleness and meekness is not so much about submitting my life to another person as it is submitting my life to God. It's about surrendering my life and following Him. And it's a thing you've got to have that goes with meekness. In order to possess meekness, or in order to have gentleness, you've got to have self-control. Like, they go hand in hand. Self-control goes hand in hand with meekness or gentleness. Because meekness is not weakness. What is weakness is a person who cannot control their own passions, their own desires, their own emotions, their own sins. That's weakness. It takes a great deal of strength to possess self-control. And it takes a great deal of strength to have meekness and surrender my life to Christ and live under His hand. But the one who can submit their passions and desires and emotions and sin to God, they demonstrate a powerful self-control. Let me just remind you that meekness and gentleness is what God blesses. For they shall inherit the earth. So, Pastor, what if happens if I totally submit my life to God and come under His control? Where I am not living my life out of control, allow my emotions to get the best of me, but to surrender my life to Him and say, Lord, I want to live for You. Then what's the benefit? The benefit, he says, is they shall inherit the earth. Well, what does that mean? Like, how am I going to gain the whole earth? What does that mean? Like, I'm going to inherit the whole earth? I don't understand that. Well, Psalm 37 gives us a very good picture. In Psalm 37, it talks about inheriting the earth and what it looks like. And the Psalms begin by warning us not to get frustrated when we see evil prosper. But if you go down in verse 10 in Psalm 37, it says this, for a little while, the wicked shall be no more. Indeed, you will look carefully for his place, but it shall be no more. In other words, don't focus on the wicked, but the meek shall inherit the earth and shall delight themselves in the abundance of peace. But you notice this phrase peace as we go through. For those, verse 22, for those blessed by him shall inherit the earth, but those cursed by him shall be cut off. Verse 34, wait on the Lord and keep his ways, and he shall exalt you to inherit the land. And when the wicked are cut off, you shall see it. Verse 37, mark the blameless man and observe the upright, for the future of that man is peace. Verse 38, but the transgressors shall be destroyed together. The future of the wicked shall be cut off. Verse 39, but the salvation of the righteous is from the Lord. He is their strength in time of trouble. And the Lord shall help them and deliver them. And he shall deliver them from the wicked and save them because they trust in him. Those who inherit the earth, they inherit the promises of God, that God is with them, that they have the peace of God upon them, and that they understand and know that God will ultimately deliver them in their time of trouble. When Jesus talked about inheriting the earth, his audience knew exactly what he was talking about, because they understood that at one time, as a nation, they were under the hands of the Egyptians, and they were in bondage, enslaved. But God delivered them and set them free and promised to give them a promised land. And they were looking forward to this promise that God had for them. And you know the story. Some of them, many of them, begin to complain and grumble and begin to rise up and have a rebellious spirit and wanted to return back to Egypt. So much so that God said that this generation had to die off, because he wasn't going to let them inherit the earth or inherit the promise of God until they became meek and gentle, until they surrendered their lives unto him. The promises of God are, when we look at what is the blessings, that means the good news is that when you're lining your life up with God's word, and you're living your life and surrendering your life to him, you'll receive the blessings. You'll receive the provisions. You'll receive purpose. You don't have to manipulate. You don't have to fight for it. You don't have to maneuver. You don't have to politic for it. You don't have to push people to receive it, because you're in God's hands, and God's promises will be for you. Don't be fooled. He knows where you live. He has your address. He sees you. And he sees that you are submitting your life to him, and you are saying, God, I trust that you will fight my battles for me. I'm not going to rage. I'm not going to be like that unbroken horse. I'm going to be allow my life to be under the control of the Spirit. And I'm going to allow you, God, to fight my battles for me. There is the story of a man in the Bible that I'm going to share with you in a second. But isn't it so cool when God just blesses your life out of nowhere? Like you're not expecting the blessing. You had no idea this blessing was coming to you, and all of a sudden God just shows up and blesses you. And you go, wow, God, I didn't see this coming. Thank you, Lord, for your goodness to me. Man, that's kind of how that's what it means to inherit the earth, to inherit the promises of God when you live your life under control. All right, let's take a moment and look at the most humblest man in the Bible. How do you know he's the most humblest man in the Bible? Because God says he is. And you probably won't guess that he is the most humblest man in the Bible, or the most meek, or the most gentle man in the Bible, because his name is Moses. And isn't Moses the one who went before Pharaoh and said, Pharaoh, let my people go? Doesn't sound very meek. It doesn't sound very gentle. Wasn't it Moses who took his rod over the Red Sea and the waters parted? But yet God calls him the most humble, the most meek. You'll find it in Numbers chapter 12. It's an interesting story. Then Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of an Ethiopian woman whom he had married. He had married an Ethiopian woman. So they said, has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us also? And the Lord heard it. And now the man Moses was very humble, more than all the men who were on the face of the earth. Here's the situation. You got to understand, Miriam is Moses' sister, and Aaron is his older brother. And they have an issue with Moses, because in their minds, Moses is making a huge mistake. Moses is married to an Ethiopian woman. a woman from Ethiopia with dark skin. Matter of fact, she's African. And they didn't fit into their way of thinking, which is wrong. So here's a man who lives his life for God and in the authority of God, and his family's upset with him. His brother and his sister. And matter of fact, they're so upset, they're telling everybody that what he's done is wrong, and, oh man, this is not right. It's bad enough when your family's upset with you. But when your family takes the garbage outside the family, it's really bad. So you think that they're getting ready to have a big throwdown. You think Moses is about to stand up and say, this is not right what you're saying, right? You think Moses is about ready to defend himself and they're going to start having a big shouting match in front of the whole community, the whole nation. But Moses doesn't do anything. There isn't no fight to see here. Here's a man who is broken before God. Verse 3. Now the man Moses was very humble, more than all the men who were on the face of the earth. Meaning Moses is going to say, God, you fight my battle for me. I'm not going to worry about this. I'm going to let you handle this. So here's a man who's living under the power and the authority of God, and he lets God fight his battles for him. So look at verse 4. Suddenly the Lord said to Moses, Aaron, and Miriam, come out, you three, to the tabernacle meeting. So the three came out. Somebody's in trouble. Have you ever had that? It sounds like mama calling you, you know, or daddy calling you home, and you know you're in trouble. Verse 5. Then the Lord came down in a pillar of cloud and stood in the door of the tabernacle and called Aaron and Miriam. And they both went forward. Looks like Aaron and Miriam are the ones in trouble because they're the ones that got called out. You've been there with your brothers and sisters before, right? Verse 6. Then God said, he said, hear now my words. If there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, make myself known to him in a vision. I speak to him in a dream. Not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my house. Meaning, he is meek. He submits his life to me. I love what he says in verse 8. I speak with him face to face. In other words, my relationship to him is deeper than just the average prophet. Because he so submits his life to me, we have a relationship where I speak to him face to face. Even plainly and not in dark sayings. In other words, I can just speak to him truthfully, like put it right out there. And he sees the form of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? So the anger of the Lord was aroused against him, and he departed. And when the cloud departed from above the tabernacle, suddenly Miriam became leprous, as white as snow. Then Aaron turned toward Miriam, and there she was, a leper. Here's what we know about Moses' wife. In Exodus 4, we know her name is Zipporah. Zipporah had taken on the faith of the Israelites. She had taken on the faith of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. She worshipped the same God that they worshipped, the true God. That she was a follower of God. What matters more to God? A person's race or their faith? Their faith. When it comes to relationships, in marriage, what matters more to God? A person's race or their faith? Their faith. Right? That we've often told our kids, we don't care what color a person looks that you marry. What we are more concerned about is, do they have a relationship with God? Do they know Christ? It's tempting to do evangelism dating. You know, where if you date someone and then you hoping that maybe they'll change and become a Christian. But listen, if they're not reading their Bible beforehand and they're not praying beforehand, You're not going to change them. Because one thing you realize in marriage, once you've been married a while, you don't change the other person. It never works. Right? Believe me, my wife's tried to change me a lot. I'm a broken man, apparently, but she hasn't been able to do it, right? You can't change the mate. That when it comes to that kind of thing, God is more concerned about faith-based than race-based. So God looks at Miriam and says, Miriam, if you've got a problem and you want to be white, I'm going to make you super white. I'm going to put leprosy on you. What does leprosy do? It turns your skin really white. And we read on verse 11. So Aaron said to Moses, Oh my Lord, please do not lay this sin on us, in which we have done foolishly, in which we have sinned. Please do not let her be as one dead, whose flesh is half consumed when she comes out of his mother's womb. So Moses cried to the Lord, saying, Please heal her, O God, I pray. That's a good brother. Then the Lord said to Moses, If her father had but spit in her face, she would not have been ashamed 7 days. Let her be shut out of the camp 7 days, and afterward she may be received again. So God said, if the dad would have disciplined her right then and corrected her, then I would not have done what I had to do. But he says, I will forgive her, but she's got to go in time out for 7 days. That's a long time out, right? So she can think about what she has done. So Miriam, verse 15, was shut out of the camp 7 days, and the people did not journey till Miriam was brought in again. Why was Moses so humble? Why was he the meekest man on the planet? Because he let God fight his battle for him. I'm going to guarantee you. When you get around family for Thanksgiving, if you got a big family, somebody's going to have an issue. It always happens. Every family's got that weird uncle or that strange aunt or that crazy cousin. He wants to argue. Wants to talk politics. Wants to talk about their anti-faith religion. And they want to stir it with you. Don't roll in the mud with them. Right? Put on the spirit of meekness. And say, God, you fight my battles for me. Yeah, I could cut them down so low right now that they would be like this. But God, you don't want me to use my power like that. You want my power to be under your control. And then at the right time, you'll use me in the right way. The flesh wants to immediately stand up and say something back. The flesh wants to immediately begin to attack. Just like the unbroken horse. We want to rile up. And yet, God wants us to say, let me take care of it. I'll lead you. I'll guide you. I will work through you. Just a word of a thought. We always, when it comes to standing up, we always let God stand up for us. But when we see someone else being abused or taken advantage of, then we stand up for them. But when it comes for us, we let God fight the battle. When it comes for someone else, we are to stand up for them. You remember Jesus, when Jesus went to the temple, and they were in the middle of all that commotion with all the money changers. It was wrong for several reasons. Number one, they were charging exorbitant prices for the doves and the animals that they were selling. Like, they were going way up because they knew that they had them traveling from a great distance and they didn't have an animal and they had to sacrifice. So they were charging exuberant fees to their own people. They were making money off their own people to go worship God, and that is wrong. Secondly, where they were standing was, it was in the outer courts, which is where the Gentiles would come to pray. So if you weren't Jewish and you wanted to come to worship the Lord, like maybe the centurion who followed God, that's where they would come to stand to pray. Well, how can you pray with all that going on inside that courtyard? And so that was wrong. So in order to stand up for those who had no voice, Jesus stood up and fought for them. But when it came for his own life, he said no word. The Bible says he was led like a sheep before her shearers is dumb, right? I mean, he didn't speak a word to Pilate. He didn't speak a word and defend himself. No. He was meek and under the power of his Father, a power under control. So when it comes to our own lives and we look in our hearts, have we given our life under the power and control of God, or are we trying to do it on our own strength? If you'll let God fight your battles and you'll learn to be silent, then you will inherit the promises of God. As we close this out today, there's two things here that I think we need to look at very carefully. Number one, we need to examine our heart. Have we come and surrendered our life to Christ first, right? Because if we've been hurt, maybe we're like that horse that is unbroken and just isn't sure if they want God to control them, to give the reins to God because they've been hurt before. Man, if that's you, I get it. I understand. Because I know what it's like to be hurt by someone who I looked at like a father figure. I know what that's like. But let me tell you, he's not like an earthly dad. As great as your earthly dad may have been, or as bad as your earthly dad has been, you have a Father in heaven who's far greater. His love is far bigger. Who loves us with an unconditional love. Doesn't mean he loves everything we do, but it does mean he loves us and continues to love us, and he's ready for us to always come to him. He will never push you away. He will never be disloyal to you. He will never abandon you. You can call him night or day. If you haven't surrendered your life to him, now is the day to do so. And secondly, for the believer, it is important that we as believers understand what gentleness and meekness is. It's not weakness. Again, weakness is when you allow your flesh to rise up and fight your own battles. And you rise up and you're ugly and you do it in the wrong manner. There's no strength in that. That's weakness. Strength is when we say, God, man, they took a shot at me. But God, I'm going to trust you. to fight my battle for me. I'm going to continue to live my life and act in a way that will bring you glory and honor, that nothing evil can be said of me. That takes strength. That takes yielding to the power of God. Am I more like the unbroken horse? That, man, anytime somebody comes near me, right? Or I'm more like the one that's broken, that even a toddler could come up and pat me and I will be okay. Which picture is